Welcome to MediaPath. I am Louise Palenker.
And I'm Fritz Coleman.
What we love as a child lives forever within us. And these first loves set us on paths towards new interests and passions and destinations that perpetually inform and enrich our journeys. And sometimes what we love as a child instructs us in formative ways that help create a healthy compass, guiding us towards the good in the world. Such a childhood love for 70s kids is the New Zoo Review. Joining us today are Doug and Emmy Jo from New Zoo Review. They are real-life couple Doug Momery and Emmy Jo Peden. We look forward to that conversation. But first, Fritz, you bear news.
This is going to be fun. Another reason for me to feel old. But that's okay. It'll be an interesting
I think you
interview.
Still fit into that puppet suit.
Right. All right, well, I want to do some remarks we're getting about our fantastic new YouTube channel. We're so excited about our YouTube channel that trying to contain ourselves would be almost impossible. So I just want to take a minute to share how great the channel is doing and how grateful we are for our new subscribers and everyone who's engaging with our videos. And if you're watching this on YouTube right now, please take a minute to subscribe and hit the bell for notifications if you haven't yet. Here are a few reactions to some of our recent videos and shorts I wanted to give a little attention to. On the Lawrence Juber, the world's greatest guitar player, Shelly Herman episode, our friend Barry Kibrick Official says, "What an awesome show. Hope's story about meeting Lawrence was amazing." It truly was. Thank you all for a great time. On the interview we did with the filmmaker and former child star Stephen Talbot, from Star Stephen Farrell 1659 says, "What fun! Stephen Talbot rocks." And an amazing response to last week's show with Kevin Pollak. His incredible impressions led Stephen Smith to comment, "Just sublime." This is wonderful. And if you're an audio listener who wants to see what the fuss is all about, go to youtube.com/@MediaPathPodcast to join the fun and the conversation. And now I'm going to launch into my media selection of
the
week.
Please.
I want to talk about Scoop.
Oh, yeah.
This is a fictionalized version of a true story. It's the account of the women at the prestigious BBC show called Newsnight, comparable to our 60 Minutes. It's about the 2019 interview with Prince Andrew and his relationship with sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. Now, there are pictures and lots of other evidence that prove Epstein and his facilitator, Ghislaine Maxwell, procured underage sex partners for the prince. The BBC wanted to get him on record about these accusations. Prince Andrew is probably, to be friendly, the most opaque of the royals. He's the least personable, the least media-worthy. Let's face it, the most boring. So there was an intense fascination with his relationship with Epstein because he was the least forthcoming. Before the interview, the prince had denied all of the allegations, which made the press even more hungry for the truth. It was a huge victory for the BBC to get him to consent to the interview. And the show booker that made it happen was Sam McAllister. The show's done from her point of view, showing how dogged and brave she had to be to make this happen. She was the only woman, and really, the only person, gutsy enough to speak truth to power during her quest to book the prince. Everyone else was busy courting favor with royalty or kissing butt to protect their jobs. Now, the tension in the movie came from two places: getting the prince to commit, and then wondering if, once the cameras were rolling, would he come clean? It was another illustration of how the royal children are knee-deep in mummy-pleasing. Everything had to be approved by the queen, and everyone sat around nervously waiting for her judgment. And it's odd to hear a man of Andrew's age calling her mummy. Prince Andrew was played by Rufus Sewell, who I am a huge fan of since his role in The Diplomat opposite Kerry Russell. Gillian Anderson played Emily Maitlis, the BBC correspondent who actually did the interview. This could either be a career-enhancing moment for her or a career-destroying debacle for her as a reporter, and you feel her pain. Sam McAllister was played by Billy Piper, who represented fearless and defiant women journalists really well. I thought this was well done.
Yes, extremely well done. And after I read Prince Harry's book, Spare, I came away with the thought that royalty is child abuse. This is no way to raise children.
Agree.
It's completely toxic and it's its own bubble, and so no one is checking or policing any of the ways within which children are treated. So I think they break people, and then they cover up for those adult people who are broken. And this is what happens. You know, you see this Prince Andrew character oblivious to his own. Yeah.
You're not a child. You're a member of the firm. And that's all it amounts to.
But he is not aware of the damage he's done or of his inability to skate on. He's just going right over his head constantly. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then all that happens to him is he doesn't get to go to the next ribbon cutting. I mean, there wasn't really any accountability.
They took his royal responsibilities away from him.
Which is probably a gift. Now he has more time to go to islands with who knows what kind of people. So it's definitely a great piece of filmmaking. So I'm going to be talking about Manhunt on Apple TV. Our current crop of historical dramas are incessantly drawing parallels to modern struggles, and rightly so. History rhymes, and it sings in harmony, however distressing the chord. We do need to focus on these dangerous repeating themes, as does Manhunt, the story of Edwin Stanton's 12-day hunt for the man who murdered President Lincoln, John Wilkes Booth. The Civil War officially ended on April 9th, 1865. At long last, the brutal conflict was over and our Union was restored. Or was it? 5 days later, a Confederate sympathizer and marginal actor named John Wilkes Booth shot Lincoln in the back of the head at Ford's Theater and leapt to the stage, shouting, "Thus always to tyrants," in Latin. This from a fan of people owning people. Booth then fled on horseback into the night, inspiring the manhunt led by War Secretary Edwin Stanton, played compellingly by Tobias Menzies. Was our first presidential assassination a piece of a larger Southern conspiracy to never surrender? Most probably. That night, plots also unfolded to assassinate Vice President Andrew Johnson and Secretary of State Seward. Neither as successful as Booth's, but Secretary Seward's entire household was viciously attacked and he was stabbed nearly to death in his bed. Co-conspirators abounded, and Stanton embarked on a mad dash to catch Booth and trace the den of insurrectionists all the way to Confederate President Jefferson Davis. Based on James Swanson's book Manhunt, The 12-Day Chase for Lincoln's Killer, the 7-episode series follows the high-stakes effort to find Booth and preserve our shakily salvaged Union. Stanton's force of will is unwavering despite a debilitating struggle with asthma and a steady wave of interference waged by Confederate sympathizers throughout government, including President Andrew Johnson. He was on the ticket with Lincoln only to secure votes in border states. The series beautifully illustrates the competing energies of the time, which resonates so profoundly today. Will we ever become a nation that lives by its own ideals? Stanton fights desperately with Johnson to maintain the achingly empty promise of 40 acres and a mule, which Johnson deems a gift, failing to see the centuries of slave labor which went uncompensated as price enough for a piece of America. Booth's hollow vanity is portrayed by Anthony Boyle in the grand tradition of historical villains operating under the delusion that their savagery should be gowned in glory. Manhunt offers an intriguing weave of perspectives on a pivotal moment in our history which continues to echo and haunt us. You will find it on Apple Plus.
I love this show.
Yeah.
I've read a lot about Lincoln.
Yeah.
And it's the first time all the minute, granular detail of that chase ever came. You know, you went to the doctor's thing, and then he ended up in a barn and died in a fire. But this was really fascinating. And it was fascinating for another reason. The political and social divide in the country and people's attitude just was hauntingly familiar with what we're going through right now, even though we haven't been, God forbid, through a civil war.
A lot of the piece is speculative because it's still kind of an unsolved murder mystery. We don't know how far the plot was spreading, but it's just hauntingly done. The acting is.
And it goes to Montreal, and it was a really rich, sort of more complex plot than most people are aware of.
Yeah, in Montreal, they had set up a Confederacy, or a lot of Southern sympathizers were fleeing to Montreal and saving money for another insurrection. I'm not sure if they ever got to the bottom of it because the nation needed to move forward into Reconstruction. And there's a lot of speculation as to if Abe had lived, you know, how things may have been different. But Southern sympathies being what they were, I don't know how long they would have remained different if Lincoln had.
I thought they made Andrew Johnson too pleasant. You know, he was a drunk racist. And they made him look like kind of like a diplomat with slightly different feelings about stuff. You know, I didn't like him that much.
Yeah, but I recommend Apple. Excellent. Apple is killing it. They've got some great series. I would love to introduce our guests if everyone feels good about that. Let's now introduce Doug and Emmy Joe. I feel like a song should break out right now, Doug. In the 1970s, our guests shared a courtyard with neighbors Freddie the Frog, Henrietta Hippo, and Charlie the Owl. I'm not sure why Henrietta doesn't get a middle name, but okay. Together, through song and sharing, they overcame differences and learned to process their feelings using the power of communication, love, and wisdom. Please welcome Doug Momery and Emily Peden, who you are Emily Peden Momery, and they are a married couple and have been since the dawn of the New Zoo Review. Welcome.
Hi, guys. So nice to have you here.
For having us.
So the arc of the show was the arc of your marriage, because didn't you get engaged like at the beginning of the show?
1970. Yeah. We were married in 1970.
Wow. And then the show premiered in 1972. So we did the pilot, and then we started into the series.
And you guys have by far and away outlasted the series, which is beautiful. Now, the themes you tackle include courtesy, cooperation, humility, patience, kindness, problem solving, manners, and promises. Did you feel a lot of pressure to exemplify these virtues, and or did verbal sparring often escalate into mailbox throwing?
Well, actually, we wanted to impart those kind of values into kids, basically, because, you know, those things and themes are timeless, and they're even relevant today as well. We did tackle things like telling the truth. We even tackled Shakespeare. Mm-hmm. We tackled a lot of these things that Sesame Street didn't tackle. They did ABC 1, 2, 3. We kind of wanted to go with, how do you get along with your parents, your siblings, you know, your friends, your brothers, your sisters?
You know, that was a very interesting and lovelier time in television when the FCC mandated a certain number of children's programming hours for the networks. And so, you know, the networks were forced into this box and they had to have a certain amount of educational content. That was the field on which you had to play. Also, we were just a gentler society. And when you compare that to some of the stuff you see on Nickelodeon now, and I'm not taking anything away from animators, but it was just gentle. It was gentle and lovely. And about your beautiful themes that Wheezy brought up, did you have any guidance from the networks about stuff that you would like, or they would appreciate if you would include in the show? Or was this all born out of your imagination?
Well, I can tell you one interesting story, because our scripts had to be approved by Mattel Toys, who are our sponsor. And you were right. The impetus for the show was, hey, we got to have some quality kids programming and not just cars zooming across the screen. Mm-hmm. So when I tackled the theme of I wanted to do a show on greed, where I wanted to say to kids, be happy with what you have. Be thankful for what you have. You don't need anything. And I wanted Charlie the Owl to sing, I've got what I need. Well, when we brought the script in, they said, oh, wait a minute, we're a toy company and we don't want kids to be satisfied.
So what rhymes with, I've got what I need, but I could always use more Barbies?
Wow. But the good thing is we did get the script on. Charlie sang the song, I Got What I Need. They were very forgiving with all these themes that we had, and they let them fly.
Well, talk about your audition. You told us in your press materials about your audition, which feels so ominously scary, where the two of you walk out on this stage and nobody speaks to you. Tell us about that moment.
Well, it was typical of lots of auditions, stage auditions I had been through. But, you know, it's all dark. The auditorium is dark. And you just walk out there and you see some heads out there, but you can't really see them clearly. Just a few people. And I played me and Charlie. You played Henrietta and Freddie and Doug.
Yeah.
And we just did our script. We did it. And we thought we'd done great, but nobody stood up and cheered. So we kind of walked off stage and waited to see what the reaction was going to be.
And somehow it must have hit a chord, because we sang songs. We really did a bang up job on the audition. But It was just crickets. You could hear a pin drop.
Devastating. Wheezy and I have pitched comedy things, and you go in there, and it's supposed to be funny, and you're going, ta-da, and
then they're like, it was so nice to see you.
Yeah. Awful.
Which is like
we'll call you.
Thank you so much for coming.
And you guys were a TV blank slate. Neither of you had experience in television before this. You were summer stock theater people, and were composing.
Right. One thing in TV.
Wow.
We were
What network were you on, and what day part? What was your time slot?
Well, I think we were on different stations in different times, you know, throughout the country. But
so it was mainly, syndicated.
Well, it was usually on after Sesame Street.
And at that time, you're probably familiar with this, Riz. It was barter TV. Mm-hmm. You know, they would. Mm-hmm. That was the time where, you know, the station took you if they could sell time, you know, basically.
Yeah.
And so we ended up on over 200 stations, though. So it was, the popularity grew once it got out there.
So did they put you on in the morning for the kids who were not old enough for school, or did they put you on after school?
No, it was a combination of both, but it was initially on in the morning, 6:30 in the morning, really early in the morning.
Ah, what a nice way to wake up. I would love it if you would go over the personalities of the characters who populated your show, because they had some very interesting personalities.
The ones who played the
characters? No, I would love to know, because, you know, I know
the characters were written.
Doug created the show, and, you know, you had to write characters that would be able to play out different scenarios and be in conflict, because they're conflict is interesting. So who was Henrietta? Who was Freddie?
You should probably speak more to that, because you created them.
Well, we had Freddie the Frog. In my mind, he was our little boy. He was our innocent kid. He was adventurous. He was sometimes disrespectful. Sometimes, you know, he loved to find out about things. And he was our little boy. And then we had Charlie the Owl, who was your know-it-all. He, you know, even if he didn't know it all, he told everybody he knew it all. And he would come up with these outlandish inventions. None of them worked, but he always was the foil. He was the antagonist, if you will, through this whole thing. Mm-hmm. And then Henrietta Hippo was just a piece of fluff, really, but she was so kind and so gentle, and she just
she
had
reminded
a way
me
about
of
her.
Miss Piggy. She had this incredible Southern charm.
No, Miss Piggy is not charming, Fritz. She's
but she used that Southern charm
she's
to
arrogant.
Shoot you in the back.
To stab you in the back.
Well, she Henrietta wouldn't stab you. She would cry before she was.
So she was a big
she
heart.
She was so gentle. I mean, I just loved every time I got to play a scene in her little house, because I wanted her to be real. I really loved her that much. It was hard for me to see her as a character.
Oh, you made a comment, Emmy Jo, in an interview or somewhere, that after you had played these characters for so long, they became real. It wasn't a person in a suit. It wasn't a disembodied voice. They became real, and you related to them as beings.
I think really the kids identified with that, because from what we're seeing on our personal appearances, it was like they really identified with Emmy Jo and I as surrogate parents, if you will, or you know, a figure that they didn't have at home, and really meant a lot to them. And we've just found out that the show had much more meaning and depth than we ever realized.
We had no idea. We were doing an entertaining, educational show for children. We had no idea about the personal impact it has had on so many lives.
I've seen you read letters from viewers. I don't know if they're current or past, and you get very teary-eyed, because these are profound effects on the lives of young kids who came from a bad background or were ill or something, and pretty amazing.
And we have had, there are children that, they call themselves now our Nuzu kids. Mm. We didn't come up with that. But the ones that are on our Facebook page, they say, we're going to be your Nuzu kids. Aww. And we've heard every story. I mean, some of them had the most wonderful, magical times growing up in very, very happy families. And then we've had others that were either very sick. We've had kids. Oh, my gosh. It's so sad. Any number of children that were abused were treated really badly because they write and tell us their stories, and they would wait until their parent was out of the house so they could see the show and they would feel safe when they were watching our show. And then the nightmare would start again. Mm.
And one of the pet peeves that you mentioned, even though it was early, one of your pet peeves was bullying back in the days before we were talking about bullying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it was because we knew it was out there. And, you know, that's when, dads were, let's face it, they were the macho guy and yes. didn't want to show feelings. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the kids told us that their dad didn't want them to watch our show because it was too soft. It was too, you know, and that it kind of breaks your heart. You know,
it really does.
You can't let your feelings out.
Yeah.
So that's why our show and the songs that we sang at the end were sensitive songs. I mean, we're you know, it's okay to feel.
Can you
it's
tell
interesting
that?
Because when we make these appearances, I didn't expect to feel this way, but there is such a connection. Lots of hugs, lots of tears, and they tell their stories, and some of them tell about the careers that they've gone into because they were inspired by something on the show. And I love them all. Yeah. I tell them, I say, you may be grown up, but you're still a lot younger than me, and you're still our new zoo kids.
Well, we love you. We had a guy come up and say, I became a chemistry teacher because of Charlie.
Yeah.
I became a doc, you know. I mean, all of these careers that were inspired by our little show. Come on.
Yeah. It was the lifespan was 72 to 77, correct?
And well, that was when we actually produced it. We did 196 half hours.
Yeah.
And, which was on every day.
But the show was into reruns in the 80s and 90s. So,
well, that was my question. Is it streaming anywhere now? Can kids be exposed to it now?
I've put it up on Prime Ticket, where I recolored the episodes and redid the sound. And I had a lot of fun going back to those old episodes. So there's about 14 episodes on Prime Ticket. There's about 30 episodes on YouTube that are free. And, you know, so it's out there, but I really want to get all 196 out there.
Yeah.
Because we really feel that the messages are still valid. They're still relevant.
Even more now than they used to be.
They are eternal. Yeah. Now, tell us about the letters that came to you, because it sounds as though... When a five-year-old wrote in, you know, she got back a picture in the mail or something, and it was handled. But the letters weren't coming to you. So someone, tell us the story about how someone found all these letters at a garage sale.
We didn't know. Like I told you, we didn't know the effect it was having on anybody. Somebody did. They got these letters from a garage sale, and they sent them to us. And so Doug and I just sat down, and we started reading letters. It was just...
Because they were letters from 4-6-year-olds, you know, even up to 10-12-year-olds. And they went to the corporate office of New Zoo. We had no control over, you know how it is in Hollywood. You know, you don't need to be involved in this side of the business.
But, you know, children.
I got letters that made people weep for different reasons.
Everything means so much to them in their little hearts. And I still feel bad that those little children never got an answer. Or if they did, it was just a form, kind of a form letter. Yeah.
You know what happens in corporate land, because I worked for a radio syndication company where I had a partner who did not want me to tell the talent how well their content was being received, because then they would ask for more money.
that's exactly what we went through.
Like, they're creators. They live on feedback. They will be better. Yes. If you compliment them and let them know they're doing well, that's just, you're being ridiculous.
The only way we knew we did well was we were invited to the White House twice.
Oh, wow.
And the reaction there was amazing. Mm-hmm. And then I would go out in the summer between seasons and to shopping malls, and I would take Freddie and my guitar and a pre-recorded show. And I mean, the kids were lined up outside the shopping mall just waiting to get in. So, that's how we knew we had something there. And it was just...
And you're still going to events, sort of nostalgia events?
You were going to Comic-Con.
Have you not heard how this got started?
No.
Let's hear it.
Our daughter.
Oh, your daughter.
We have three children. They're all grown.
Okay.
And our oldest daughter, Joanna, who lives just a few minutes from us, walked into the house about a year and a half ago now.
Yeah.
And just said, you know, Mom and Dad, I think you need a Facebook page.
Did she?
And she started the Facebook page. And she, everything that you see on that Facebook page, we've got two of them, the Newsu Review, and then we've got the Newsu Review
Family Reunion,
which is just for the grown-up kids to post pictures of their families, their animals, whatever they want to share with us.
Oh.
It's all Joanna. And she goes, like, she's going to go with us to Boston. And really, everybody just loves her. And it really was, it's been, she loves it. But it's just an act of love. Because she was the one that thought, you have people out there who love you and want to have a relationship with you.
Well, we have not done anything with Newsu for over 40 years.
Yeah.
And so this was a real revelation to us when the page went live, and we did our first first appearance was San Diego Comic Con.
Yeah,
and we'd never been to
that's
one of those
insane,
things.
Isn't it?
Oh,
you've been to Comic Con in San Diego?
Oh, I just know about it. It's like another planet.
Oh my goodness!
Yeah,
it's crazy, but we thought, you know what? We got to bring the frog because nobody's going to recognize us. So we brought Freddie, and we had our banner, and I'm telling you the reaction.
We brought Joanna.
Yeah.
And one of our grandsons.
Yeah, to help us with the costume, and the reaction was amazing. We got asked to stay a third day because some of the people that were working there were upset that they didn't get to come see us. So
how is that? That's a goosebump-inducing experience at your particular stage in life, as it would be for me. That's got to be so satisfying.
Yeah. Can I tell you this one story? It's in San Diego. We were waiting underneath. We hadn't actually gone up. And there was a policeman. I guess he was a policeman. He had his dog with him. And I said, may I approach your dog? And he brought him over. And he was a bomb sniffing dog that was working underneath. And I had my picture taken with him, and Joanna put that picture up, and everybody, all of our Newsu kids that had dogs started putting their pictures up of dogs.
Hey, has Joanna thought of posting the letters that you found recently, just maybe one per day? Cause maybe you'll find somebody who wrote one of those letters.
Yeah. We thought about
that.
That's a very good idea. And I think she is, pondered
that.
Now, when
idea.
She's done with that, she could give rebirth to this wonderful concept and contemporize it and get it on TV again.
Yeah.
Years ago,
I think it was before Joanna was even born, we did a personal appearance at my mother's school. She was a music teacher in Dallas. And Joanna put those pictures up, and someone got in touch and said, I'm one of the kids in that picture.
Oh.
And I had a chance to visit with her.
Wow.
That's pretty special.
Well, let's go back to the beginning. Your paths crossed in a very interesting way. You were both doing summer stock. Doug was composing songs for a show. And Emmy Jo was acting at a show, and one day she hears this angelic sound coming from a stage next door, and went over to investigate where this was coming from, and it was kismet. Tell that very touching story.
It was a dream strumming.
I just, I had all these lines to learn, and I had to go someplace quiet so I could work on them, and I kept hearing this music. So I just walked in. It was Doug, who I really didn't know. I mean, he was just part of, sit down there, I'd come in and just listen. I just loved his music.
Well, these were adult songs, because I was trying to make it as a rock and roll.
As a rock and roll guy. And then I discovered that he was getting up at like 5 or 5:30 in the morning and going to play basketball. And that did it for me. Ooh. I thought, a guy in the arts who loves sports.
The boxes are a ticking.
Yeah, so yeah. You were a big sports fan, right? So it wasn't even the music and the talent and the writing. It was basketball.
Well, our family, in a way, that's kind of sad. My family's very sports oriented. Okay. And we always... It's just a big part of our life.
You look fantastic. It's obvious you take great care of yourself. You really do. You both do.
Thank you.
Nice thing for you to say.
No,
I'm happy.
It's true. Well,
I'm happy.
That matters a lot.
And they have fulfilling lives. Mm-hmm. So how did your examination of boiling down the basics of emotions to the level of a child's understanding, how did that inform your own journeys and your own choices?
Well, I think I came from, immigrants that came over from, through Ellis Island and the whole thing about America and listening and being part of this country. I just felt like that those were the messages we needed to do, was love, cooperation, tolerance, and that. You know, I was kind of talking to myself and to our kids, which we didn't even have yet. But
have you thought about running for office? Have you thought about running for office? You could solve a lot of our problems right now.
I just feel like, we've lost our way. Let's put it that way. And, and I just feel like we had lost our way back then, if you remember. The 70s were not easy, but they were a little more gentle, a little more innocent, where we could actually sit around and talk and agree to disagree.
But they were confusing for a child. The images that children would see on TV, that their parents watched, and the news were, there was a lot of violence on the news that children saw, and sometimes they weren't really sure, whether or not they were going to be safe. And so you were giving them a lot of reassurance.
I just wanted to give them an alternative.
Yeah.
That, like we did the show on violence, where Freddie was just freaked out because he had to fight another frog, Tough Harold,
That Harold,
in a boxing ring. And, it turns out that Tough Harold wasn't that tough. He couldn't even swim. So Freddie got to teach him how to swim. And it was all about, hey, face your fears, but you don't have to fight. You don't have to use violence.
Yeah, we can collaborate. We don't have to.
And Emmy Jo, you've commented a lot. I mean, people on the outside wouldn't know this. I go to Disneyland and I say, who are in those costumes? I would just love to pull the head off and look at these people and see who they are. But you've said that the wonderful thing about your show was there were some extremely talented people that were doing the choreography on that show. You said there was one girl that went on to the Mouseketeers or something, or you were talking about some dancers.
Well, she was a Mouseketeer.
While she was doing your show.
No, Sharon, when she was a little girl, was a Mouseketeer. That was in the 50s. Yeah. This is the
70s. She was a star.
Yeah.
In my book, she was a star. And when I walked onto that set and there was little Sharon from the Mickey Mouse Club, I was just, I just can't believe that I'm going to be on the same soundstage as Sharon Bear. And we've become very, very good friends. We're still very much in touch with her.
Are you an honorary Mouseketeer?
Well, I don't think she's, I should ask her about that. Can I be an honorary Mouseketeer?
I mean, there's your hat, here's your ears, let's go.
We had great dancers in each one of the costumes.
Yeah, they were great. And it was choreographed. And what was very interesting was it was voiceover. The voices of the characters were voiceover, but they were perfectly synced to the movement of it. How did that work? How did the production of that work?
Well, offstage was a sound booth with the voiceover people watching a monitor, and then it was broadcast to the soundstage. So the minute Henrietta Hippo, she heard her voice, she would move her mouth. Mm-hmm. So it was they were so in tune with each other, the voice and the dancer, it was immediately sunk right there. We didn't have post-production syncing at all. And then the cool thing was all the music tracks were pre-recorded on the Friday before the next week's shoot. And so all the songs, even dialogue within the songs, because it was all about musical comedy. I'm a musical comedy nut. And so we pre-recorded the songs, and the sound guys on the set had to crossfade between pre-recorded and live sound. Wow. So the song would end, and they would crossfade.
And there were there were three songs per show, and you composed over 600 songs for that show.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite, and would you play it for us?
I wish I could. Next time. Okay. I don't have my guitar with me. Okay.
Did you guys put out recordings?
Yeah, we only had one on Disneyland Records back in the 70s. But on our YouTube channel, if you
I know. I've been watching.
My daughter said, "Hey, Dad, why don't you sing a song a week?" And so I've been on YouTube singing a song a week.
You know? And you mentioned that I think you're going to put out a recording of some of the favorites from News Over You. Is that right? Or that has already happened?
I put together two albums, and they're on Spotify and iTunes, and getting a lot of play out there from kids. And
that's fun.
It's got a lot of the fun songs.
Your daughter's giving you a lot of extra work. Your daughter's giving you a lot of extra work.
Hey, that's how it worked for Tony Bennett.
He loves it.
Right.
He loves it. He works all the time. He creates constantly.
So, and Joe, did you continue your theater career after the show was dark?
No, I really didn't. I really loved, we have three children, and I love staying home with them and taking them to their lessons and everything. And
I have to brag on her. She got her master's in marriage and family counseling.
Oh my goodness. Good for you.
She went back to school to get that my master's degree. And I did the bookkeeping for our company.
Yeah.
But I honestly was very content to be at home. I didn't have any longing to be back in show business again.
Mm-hmm. Tell us about
now she does.
That's everything goes in cycles and there's many chapters to our lives. But tell us about visiting the White House, and isn't there more you could have taught Nixon?
Wow. I mean, it's just, if you've ever been there, I don't care who is the president, what party, what, it doesn't even matter. It is so impressive. Oh, and the first time we went was at Christmas.
No, it was Easter.
No, we went to the Christmas one first, didn't we?
Yeah.
Okay, it was Easter. And it was the Easter egg roll. And that was tons of fun. But the one that I remember especially was the one when we went at Christmas, and Mrs. Nixon had a party for the children of the foreign diplomats.
Wow.
And it was, I think, in the East Room, but we got to go inside the White House, and the decorations were just so beautiful. And you just feel like it's very, very awe-inspiring. I've never, ever forgotten it.
Yep.
Yeah. Wow. What a moment.
Doug, do you own your tapes? Do you own the product?
Well, we have the costumes here in Texas.
No, but what I mean is, do you own the product of the New Zoo Review, the tapes?
No, the IP was bought by a friend of mine now.
Oh.
I had to do some digging to find out who the heck owns this. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, as you go through Hollywood, you understand that all these things don't come back to the creator.
No.
Oh, absolutely. So what is it? What is the arrangement in terms of you guys, you know, pushing the brand out there again? Can everyone benefit collaboratively?
Everyone benefits because I have a really great relationship with the guy that owns the IP. And he has let us do these personal appearances, have the Facebook page, have products out there to sell. And it's been kind of a full circle. Really unbelievable that I did find out who it was, and we've just gotten along great. And he wants to see new shows as well as I do. And we actually had an animator, I don't know if you've seen it on our Facebook page, but did a 2D animation of the theme song, and it's just charming. People just love it. So there's a lot of avenues out there that we're exploring.
That's exciting. Talk about who Barbara Atlas is, Doug.
Well, the Mattel lady.
Yes, well, you know, she, I have to give her credit. She had a toy store in Whittier, California. My mom worked for her. And she had needlepoint and was doing some products. And
you were designing needlepoint.
I was designing some needlepoint for her because I started out as a scenic designer in theater and graduated to acting and then writing the shows. But she came to my mom and said, you know, I really want to do a kid's show. I really want to do a kid's show. Do you know anybody that can help me? And she said, well, my son is a playwriting major. Why don't you give him a try and see what he can come up with? So I met with her and she said, my only criteria is that you use this beanbag frog. That's all you got to do.
So, I think did she call him Freddy at that time?
I don't know if it was Freddy. She might have called him Freddy. Anyway, so I went home that night and I thought, well, I'm going to see what I can come up with. So I actually wrote the theme song that night. I created the other characters to go along with them. Actually, Charlie was a giraffe to begin with, but you know, the confines of the set, that changed pretty quickly.
It's like Big Bird. And,
you want him to take out a lighting grid.
Mm-hmm. So I went back to her and played her the song and showed her my idea. And she said, I really like this. And that was the start of it.
And when we got married on the way back to LA, in those days, American Airlines had writing paper on the plane, and Doug got some American Airlines writing paper and he sketched out his ideas for the set, and I still have it in a scrapbook.
Really?
But it really was just one of those fairy tale dreams that came true.
Well, the set is very charming, and it's very soothing watching you guys dance with those characters in that setting. Is very, I don't know, there's something, it's got a quality to it that's like medicine.
Well, that's good.
Thank you.
That's what we hear from everybody.
I appreciate that.
I'm glad, because we certainly don't want to have the opposite effect.
Let's get into some Hollywood lore. This is for us geeks that love Hollywood history.
Let's face it, we're not Fred and Ginger. I mean,
but you recorded at Desilu Studios, which was Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz, right? Did you do the bulk of the shows there? And who else were in the adjacent sound stages?
We did our first season at Desilu. Then we moved to Cinema General. Then we moved to MGM. And our last season was done at the Burbank Studios, Warner Brothers. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So we kind of moved around.
Who was in production at Desilu when you were there? Maybe you don't remember.
I'm not really sure. Yeah. I was such a green kid, I have no idea that anything else was happening.
I'll tell you why I asked. This is a really personal question. I have a bike riding partner we have both retired from outdoor bike riding. He's 95 years old now. But he started his career as an assistant director and worked at the Desilu Studios and even did one or two of Lucy's original shows. And he talks about the weighty history of that building. Maybe it was after you guys were there, but he said it was pretty amazing.
Was that the Charlie Chaplin building?
I don't know.
It became A&M Records?
I don't know. But it was wonderful to be there. I can tell you that.
Yeah. And it sounds like, Doug, you were doing every part of the production, from writing to producing to performing.
Everything.
So I don't know that you ever came up for
everything.
And I know I probably got on the director's, in the director. On Fridays, I was in the band that did the song. You know, I was playing guitar in the band.
Oh, wow.
And then as we were blocking the show and doing it, I also had my ideas for that.
But you're always very nice. You never go with
anybody's face. And then I would run to the truck to see how the take was.
Wow.
So, you know, I'm sure I was a pain.
No, I
don't. Did you rehearse? How far ahead of time did you have the scripts for that week's show? And did you rehearse a lot?
Yeah, we actually, I wrote the songs in the summer and the storylines in the summer. And then we had a team of 12 really gifted writers who fleshed out the story.
Wow.
And then I, kind of crafted the songs around the final script. And so we had to have all the scripts done, because we did 4 shows a week. We pre-recorded the tracks on Friday. We rehearsed 2 shows on Monday, blocking everything. Recorded those 2 shows on Tuesday, and then 2 more shows on Wednesday. Recorded those on Thursday. then pre-recorded the next week's music, which was a whole album worth of stuff on Friday. That was the schedule.
Now, now that you are reviewing some of this material and colorizing it, are you seeing things that you hadn't seen since the day you recorded it? Because you then moved on to the next show, the next show, the next show. Are you looking at things and going, I don't even remember doing this?
But to tell you the truth, I do. I mean, first of all, I listened to those songs. I said, did I write that? Mm-hmm. How did I ever write that?
Because there were so many. That's the thing that is amazing. Yeah. It's, 600 songs. It's a lot of music.
Yeah. Well, and the satisfying thing is that they actually hold up.
And they really resonated. There are so many touching stories about how your show affected young kids. And there's a story about some child in northern Mexico watching your show, and I hope I'm getting this right, and actually learning English from your show.
That is true.
That was someone that wrote in.
I think he actually was because we did a Facebook Live. I think he actually talked to us.
Wow.
It was just amazing.
Tell us some of the other stories of your now grown children who are finding you online.
Well,
How about the guy that's not in prison?
Yeah, that's true. That's when we were in Philadelphia, and this man walked up. He was just huge, tattoos everywhere, kind of tough looking. He came over and he had big tears in his eyes, and he said, "I just want you to know I'm not in prison because of you and this show."
Oh my gosh.
And he said, "I've had a really, really rough life, but your show is what helped me to stay out of prison and learn right from wrong." And then we had a guy come up in San Diego, and he had tears in his eyes. I was crying. We were both crying. And he said, "I lost my mother. I think it was a year ago. He had lost his mother. She had died." And she said, "I always remember watching the Newsweek Review sitting on her lap." Hmm. So it wasn't so much our show that brought the tears, but it was that memory of that special time sitting on his mommy's lap. Hmm. And there's one of our Newsweek kids right now is going through some very, very, very serious health challenges. And, there's a way on that Facebook page. And I'd like everybody to know that if you want to get in touch with us, you can private message us on that Facebook page. And she did quite a long time ago. And I'm praying for her, and she knows that. And she keeps me apprised of what is going on in her life. And, I just am thankful that at our stage of life, we can be a source of encouragement and comfort to those grown-up kids.
It's amazing how the universe works. Your experience in marriage and family therapy probably gives you a special empathy with some of the home problems these kids are experiencing, and gives you a special insight into the pain they're experiencing.
Maybe. It was really interesting. It took me 5 years to get my master's, and I would come home from my counseling classes, and our kids would say, "Mom, stop trying to counsel me," because they would see the technique.
But I think it's interesting that you're talking about kids, and maybe especially boys, who know that their father is not going to be okay with them, it off or suck it up, and then they're able to see through your show that there are other people who are expressing their feelings, and that maybe someday I'll be a dad who lets his kid do that. And they still need you, because now they're in their 50s and 60s, and if they never had a dad who was open to having feelings, they still have you guys.
Everybody, each one of us, we need tenderness.
Yeah. and soothing.
We just need kindness.
And we need to say things that soothe one another. You know, the yes. internet invites people to attack each other. And every day I try to say something soothing to.
Well, you in the internet, you know, you can stay anonymous, which is very, yeah. very dangerous.
Give spineless people guts.
Yeah. But they're spineless because they feel threatened. And it's this whole cycle.
You know,
And I just feel so bad for the kids that are bullied. I remember being bullied when I was a little girl over certain things, and it's so cruel. In junior high and high school, I think that's maybe when it kind of peaks. But I think all of us who, you know, like our Nuzu kids, who are now many of them grandparents,
yeah.
can do our part to help our grandchildren
right.
be kind and be tender and treat other people just the way we want to be treated, just like the golden rule, treat mm-hmm. other people. Every time you relate to someone before you get angry, you think, wait a second, do I want somebody to say those things to me? You know, and just... encourage.
It's interesting the ripple
kindness.
Effect
yeah.
you may have had. So you spoke to 5 and 6 year olds, as you say, who learned to massage their hearts and be kind human beings. They pass that down to their children. Their children pass it down to their grandchildren. So it's probably impossible to calculate how you've positively affected your little family of viewers over time.
Yeah.
It was only 22 minutes long. Mm-hmm. I mean, and, you know, we did a lot of them, but was it that impactful for just that short amount of time?
Yes.
It must have been.
Yes.
You know?
I'm very, very thankful because we never knew. And I've learned over my life of raising kids, and we've got 11 grandchildren and interacting with them, and that a child's mind and heart is like a blank slate. Mm-hmm. And everything that happens to them, everything they see, everything that they hear, it goes right into the computer. Mm-hmm. And it's so important. They retain that. And it's just so important that those things that go in are life-giving and positive and encouraging and kind.
Mm-hmm. Because that doesn't mean we, you know, ignore problems.
Sure.
I mean, that's why we wanted in the show to have Charlie and conflict and resolution.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, because you have to see how you handle a temper tantrum. I mean, I can't. One of the most hysterical shows was when Henrietta would lose her temper and get on the floor and
oh my goodness,
stomp her feet and throw a temper tantrum. In fact, the show is called Temper Tantrums.
And it's on our Facebook page if you haven't seen it. And it is hilarious.
What are you have two Facebook pages, right? Tell us what they are again.
The Nuzu Review is the Facebook page with all the clips on it. And it's the one that our daughter does we have mm-hmm. live events sometimes mm-hmm. and things.
You got to be careful because there's some rip-offs.
Yeah, there's one that's called the Nuzu Review fan page.
But that's
which
not,
is not us. We've got the Nuzu Review. And then the one for our Nuzu kids is the Nuzu Review family reunion.
Yeah.
And that's just for personal posting of pictures. I see friendships being formed among our Nuzu kids. It's the coolest thing.
Love that.
So let me ask you this individually. If each of you had to spend time being locked in a closet, which of the characters would you like to be with?
Why Freddie, do they have to be
Henrietta,
in a closet?
Charlie.
Can't they be in
a
courtyard?
Small space.
Can they be in a courtyard on a studio space?
No, it has to be a small, confined space where the other person would get really irritated.
All right, can it be an elevator that's just stuck between floors? Okay, go ahead.
Well, that's an easy one for me. I choose Henrietta.
And I have to choose Freddie because I'm still a kid.
And you used to go on the road with Freddie. Freddie was your road hog with Guy. That's great.
He's your wingman. Yeah, that's so awesome. Well, what else should folks know if they're looking to find you? I think your YouTube pages deserves a shout out because you're on there. There's a lot of footage from the 70s, but then you kind of post a song a week, Doug.
Yes. And I think I've done four or five so far, and next week will be really cool. I think I'm going to do the theme song live.
And we're on Instagram as the News and Review, too.
Yeah. Yes, I was looking at your Instagram page for some inspiration for today's conversation, and your Instagram page is a lot of fun because you have at the Easter, you're with Trisha Nixon, there's like all kinds of old school wonderfulness. There it is.
That's a great picture of you guys. Nice shirt, Doug.
And video clips, and also some wonderful stills of some of the guest stars that you had on. You had Henry Mancini.
Oh, we had some great guest stars.
Yeah. Any good stories?
Oh, yeah. Well, my story I love to tell is we had Henry Mancini as one of our guest stars. And so here I am, a young composer. I love musical comedy, love musical theater. And so I'm sitting in the Freddy's rowboat with Henry Mancini, and I get to talk to him. So I ask him, I didn't call him Hank. I said, Mr. Mancini, what kind of advice can you give a young composer? He said, just keep writing. It doesn't matter what you write.
That you had already written 600 songs? Like, I've been writing, sir.
No, this was, I only wrote 100. This was.
What credibility for you, though, that he came on the show, and that's fantastic.
Maybe his kids loved it. True. Maybe you got your guest stars because their kids loved the show.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, we got the guest stars because Emmy Jo was pregnant with our first child.
I had given birth the first day of shooting on that season.
On the last season.
Last season. My water broke.
And you couldn't make it in, could you?
No. I couldn't make it in. So that's when the guest stars started coming in.
Ah, okay.
Well, we had great.
This is an episode about be helpful.
Here's a mop.
We had Joanne Worley. We had Pat Paulson. We had so many.
That's fantastic. You
know, I mean, just cool people. I think they really loved being on the show. You know, we had June Lockhart on there. It was wonderful having her there.
Oh, that's amazing.
Well, watching your clips made me smile.
She's still going strong. I think she's 90 or something.
Yeah. Watching your show really made me smile because I have grandchildren, and I thought, ooh, it would be so easy to steer these kids towards this show now. Now you just have to watch Nickelodeon and bite your tongue and hope you don't see, you know. I mean, I'm talking about for really young kids. And I'm not taking anything away from the credibility of some of their shows, but woo, we're just in a faster, louder, darker world now.
So what do your grandkids say when they watch episodes of your show?
You know, honestly, they don't really watch it, only because even with our children, we never really talked about it. We never wanted them to think that we were different from anybody else. And we were just old mom and dad, and we're just granny and granddad. And they've got their shows they like. Dude Perfect. They watch Dude Perfect.
Okay.
And they watch, I've got almost all of the three Stooges, and they watch old cartoons.
My grandson
like
loves Bluey, that show from New Zealand, which is really good, and it's very similar to News and Review. It's very gentle but funny,
and
cute.
Yeah.
Well,
you know, if you when we play our show or actually perform our show for young kids now, even preschool and. They just love the movement of the animals, and even if they don't understand what's being said or sung, it's still captivating for them. So I think I think the shows would play well for the preschoolers.
My goodness, when we go on appearances, and like really the only one we've brought so far, we brought Freddie and Charlie.
Right.
But children come up that their parents are not necessarily coming to our little table. But the children find Freddie or they find Charlie and they come running down the hall and for a hug, just to stand there. And they don't care so much about us, but they really want to be next to Freddie and Charlie. So there's a magic there for sure.
Oh, wow. That's wonderful. Well, we just want to thank you so much for this conversation. We really enjoyed talking with you. And so what should people remember if they want to go and find you online, your Facebook page, your YouTube page, and you have a website.
And Instagram.
Well, and also go on Prime Ticket, and there's some nice, good shows on there, too. that are remastered and recolored, and the sound is a little better. And also, there's the option for closed captioning on the ones on Prime Ticket. So,
and adults, for your grown-up kids too, I bet they're going to see them in more vivid color than they ever saw you on TV. Their TV, the definition in those days was not so good. The reception was dependent on how your brother was maneuvering the rabbit ears, right? So
yeah.
It's going to...
We're
watching VHS back then.
We're so excited to go to Boston, because once Joanna announced that, they're just coming out of the woodwork saying, I'm coming, I'm traveling.
What
I'm
are you doing
tickets,
up there? What, is it a Comic-Con or what is it?
Uh-huh.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a it's the New England Comic-Con Fest or something like that. And it's in Boston, and
it's on our Facebook page.
The end of June. It's the 27th through the 30th of June.
Well, have a great time.
Some of these are people, are grown-up kids that we've gotten to know.
Yeah.
Just online on Facebook, and we're going to get to meet them.
Oh,
I'm excited.
Oh, I want to hear all about that.
Well, you're going to go up there, and you're just going to sit there and absorb the love and absorb the fact that you have been so meaningful to so many people. That has to be extremely satisfying for you.
It's wonderful.
I'll tell you, it's
humbling.
It's actually
humbling.
Humbling.
Yes, that's the word.
Because you're good folks.
Grateful. Especially at my stage of life, at our stage of life, it's just a wonderful thing to know that even when you didn't know you were impacting someone, you did.
Yep.
So I'm thankful.
Whatever you need, give it away, and it comes back in all kinds of beautiful waves, and that's what you're receiving. So,
wise words.
Deservedly. All right, here come your closing credits. Thanks for joining us on this journey. We would love to continue our conversation with you on Instagram and Twitter, or we are at MediaPathPod. And on Facebook, where our show page is MediaPath Podcast, and our Facebook group is MediaPath with Fritz and Wheezy Podcast Community. You can find full video podcast episodes loaded with bonus visual content on our YouTube channel, MediaPath Podcast. We would love it if you would judge our appearance and then subscribe. You can write to us at MediaPathPodcast@gmail.com, and we want to know what you've been watching. What have you finding along your media path? Please share that with us. If you enjoyed the show, please give us a nice rating wherever you get your podcasts, and share our social media posts so that your friends can learn about your excellent taste in podcasts. Our website is MediaPathPodcast.com. It is a great place to browse around and find interesting episodes you may have missed. We also have a fun and sassy newsletter loaded with photos and quizzes and more dish about our guests. All the newsletters are right there for you to enjoy on our website. And you can also sign up to get your newsletter delivered straight to your inbox. And we just send one per week because we do understand healthy boundaries. We want to thank our wonderful guests, Doug Momery and Emily Peden Momery from the New Zoo Review. Our team includes producer Dina Friedman, John Maddox, Bill Filipiak, Mason Brown, Garrett Arch, Jared Riet, Jordan Reyes, and you. Our theme music is by me and John Maddox. I am Louise Palanker, here with Fritz Coleman. Be well and wise, and we will see you along the media path.